Okay, let's go to this call here, and we got another call. Good morning. Who's this?
Yeah, good morning. This is Robert in Houston, guys.
Hey, Robert.
Robert, and where are you in Houston, Robert? Oh, yeah, you are. Yeah, yeah.
This is Houston. Yep. Say again, please.
Houston, we have a problem.
Well, you're right about that. I'm getting in trouble with the medical community again, arguing with them.
Imagine that.
And I hate to say anything because, you know, you go in there, you're not, well, I was going to say, you know, you're not as smart or educated as them, and you feel like, you know, how can you argue with them? But anyway, a person I know, I went in as a friend, you know, to sit and be another ear listening with them, and they were recommended to get an endoscopy and a colonoscopy.
Good.
I know what a colonoscopy is. What's an endoscopy, Doc? And is there any drawbacks or dangers in that?
So that's a scope down the other end. You swallow this scope with a camera on the end, and they look at your esophagus and stomach.
What fun.
Yeah, they have to anesthetize you, right? You don't get general, just local, I guess?
Yeah, they numb you up some and give you some sedation, typically.
What are they looking for, Robert, with this fellow?
They were diagnosed with pancreatitis years ago, and I'm glad you asked that, but I didn't want to get into details and then miss the original question. So the long and short was they were diagnosed with pancreatitis 20 years ago, probably, and over the years, their lipase amylase was high. However, this young doctor said, no, according to the elevation of amylase and lipase, that doesn't fall under the criteria of 6 times the normal limit. So they don't have pancreatitis. And I'm kind of arguing with them. Lipase and amylase is destruction of pancreas cells, which is inflammation. Pancreatitis is pancreas inflammation. So how could you say that's not pancreatitis? No, that's not pancreatitis. So I'm like,
Yeah.
So I'm with you there, Robert. You know, let's be an advocate for your friend's body. And if the enzymes are going up, we know the pancreas is trying to communicate something. Now, whether it meets the administrative criteria officially for some word called pancreatitis, that's a whole different story.
Right.
So.
And so that's why they want to do the endoscopy, because he said that, you know, he didn't think there was pancreatitis, but he said they wanted to rule out ulcers, infection, celiac, and irritable bowel. He said that's what the endoscopy will kind of look for, because he said those were the usual causes.
Yeah, so they're going to do a biopsy then of the small intestine. They're actually going to go down in there and biopsy. And, you know, with all of those, there's a risk of hurting something and creating some bleeding. It's not something personally I would volunteer for. It's considered a safe procedure by medical people for what that's worth or not worth. So it depends on what your friend really wants.
Does he have symptoms?
They get some occasional pain in the pancreas area when they, you know, eat some junky food and so forth. And, you know, pancreatitis causes fatigue and nausea. But again, she doesn't meet the major criteria for pancreatitis according to those symptoms, you know. Severe pain, he said, no. If you had pancreatitis, you'd know. And, you know, dizzy, nausea.
Well, what do you think about just trying a whole bunch of these, New York... what I'm thinking, Meridian, is the, who's the fellow that not with us and, you know... What's that?
Yeah. Pancreatic enzymes.
Gonzalez. Yeah, the Gonzalez pancreatic enzymes and pony up on those. I mean, Doc, you think that couldn't hurt, could it?
So I'm still stuck back on the testing thing for a minute.
All right, go ahead.
And so, so what I would say is get a hemocult test, and it's a little thing you put some of your poop on this little slide and put some drops on it. If it turns purple, you may have blood in your poop. But if it's negative, you don't have an ulcer. And very likely you don't have active celiac disease if you don't have any bleeding going on. So why have when you go in and look, if you can tell safely without invading yourself, whether you have microscopic bleeding in the gastrointestinal system. And you can test for celiac by swabbing your cheek. You don't have to have somebody stick a needle in your small, even though that's the administrative criterion. If you swab your cheek and you have a celiac gene and you have symptoms, pretend you have celiac and see if what you have goes away when you get off gluten, grains, and dairy products and things like that. So it depends on what your friend wants.
Yeah, that's the key, is what they want, what are they willing to do. And so let me just quickly interrupt.
Was that called Hemacult?
Hemacult,
H-E-M-A?
It's H-E-M and then the word occult, O-C-C-U-L-T, like hidden.
Ooh, hidden occult.
Patrick, go ahead.
No, that's all right. I'll ask it right after. I'll write myself a note. It was something about that little test on the stool I wanted to ask Doctor. So I don't know what else we can do here with somebody third party, Robert, but is that helpful at all?
Sure, yeah. That's, part of the thing is we're not supposed to play God. And then the other part is I'm supposed to help kind of protect them. So anytime I start getting involved, I create more confusion, and they want to go, the normal way and not be arguing with the doctor and having me splitting hairs on the definition of pancreatitis, so it's kind of stressful. I think my approach is good, but then you get in trouble with the other two sides, because they don't know what we know,
Well, Robert, next time somebody, a doctor tells you you're not supposed to play God, here's what you say to him.
Okay.
That's your response.
don't say nothing.
Crickets.
Was that crickets?
Just crickets. Nothing. Silence. Okay. So.
And lastly, the colonoscopy. I remember hearing an interview once by a doctor, Dr. Gabe Merkin, and he said if you get a colonoscopy, you want to be the first one who gets it in a day. Now, that's hard to actually schedule, be the first one, because he said it takes like 12 hours to sterilize those, and they only have maybe two colonoscopy devices.
That's good
and
advice.
Yet they're doing 30 a day. So is there anything to that, not sterilizing them, Doc?
I think he's on to something, Doc. Yeah. I think he's on to something.
That's pretty funny. Well, that's a deep sharing, isn't it? When you
Way too much information, Robert. Way too much information.
Well, again, this
No, just kidding.
Hairs,
no, we're just, no, no, no. It. There could be. I don't know. Sounds right to me. But
there was no comment from Doc?
Now you crickets over there.
Now, I don't really know the specifics of that, but it does make a strong mental image, And honestly, I won't get a colonoscopy. My mother died of colon cancer.
Yeah.
I'm doing other things for my colon. I'm not having somebody stick a tube up there when they're having a bad day and nick my bowel and wake up the next day with a zipper up my abdomen because they had to open it and sew my bowel shut, which I personally saw happen 3 times in my career. I know it's not very common, but that was a strong mental image for me. Somebody thinking they were coming in for a colonoscopy for the day, and they were in the hospital for quite a while trying to deal with peritonitis from a puncture in their bowel. Just not interested. And I know all the statistics go the other way, but I've just chosen to be nice to my colon.
And I'm in the same boat, and I had colon cancer about 30 years ago. There's no way I'm putting a scope up there.
No way. And you know what, Robert and others, I've heard people that they do these colonoscopies, and just like doctor says, they come out and they say, oh, yeah, we were in there, and we snipped a few polyps, And they don't tell you they're going to do that, and they do it, and you don't want anybody cutting on you at all, especially if you don't even know where the cutter's been, if you know what I mean.
Right. Okay, good ideas.
All right, see you soon.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Yeah, I guess maybe you sign something when you do this colonoscopy stuff and they have your permission to do whatever they want. They must, huh, Doc?
Yeah, when you read those things, it's like we can do anything we want anytime we want and you can't say anything later about it. It's a pretty strong language. That we have to get people to just give away all their power. which is kind of how we got in this situation in the first place.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's a big challenge, I think, as Dr. Daniel said yesterday, and who, how was it yesterday or Tuesday, you know, the MD out of Panama, that, you know, once you get in the system, of course, Meridian, like you did it very methodically with full consciousness, right? You knew what you were doing. You knew what you needed done. And that's different, you know, and these are the people to do what they did, right? I mean, cool. You know, they knew what they were doing. And you did it and took care of your food and all that. But once you get in the system the other way and you start having them giving you stuff, you know, and doing these different tests and giving you meds and you try to mix that up, you know, it's kind of like once you're in, you're in. You take the blue pill and it's tough, boy. It's
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I think the real key is that, you know, more and more we need to become educated and see to what degree we're willing to take personal responsibility for our own health and to, get rid of the things in our lives that are contributing to challenges and toxicity and poisoning, and also look at what we can do to nourish and nurture and reduce inflammation in our bodies. And there are some really well-known, scientifically documented anti-inflammatory types of diets you can look into. I mean, I personally am very excited about what I'm seeing in all the science, but personally and with the people I'm working with ketosis and fine-tuning that ketosis based on their individuality and fasting. And more research is coming out about the benefits of these things to reduce inflammation throughout the body anywhere. And then energetically and homeopathically doing things that will support us as well. You know, in this case, for this person's pancreas. Like right now, I'm doing a protocol, a homeopathic protocol for Helicobacter pylori. And I'm also doing the detox drops. And I was telling Richard, I just feel like a whole new level of energy today. And I don't know that I will tomorrow, because I am doing a program to help, you know, have my body move these things out in its own natural way and knowing.
Right. Yes.
You know, it's strong work. And today I'm in that place of, yoo-hoo, you know, the energy's here. Well, still boogie. And it hasn't been for a few days. So yeah. It's probably in the detox mode.
Well, those of us who are waking up, and we have people all over the world who are doing it, there's so many options. I mean, it's like, whew, a lot of different options, isn't it? Just
Yes. Whatever
feels right to you, you can do so many different things. Okay, let's get through some of the other emails before we go. Let's see. Trish says, oh, this is not for you. Lee writes, can Dr. Massey speak more to the connection between emotion and illness, specifically grief in the lungs? What does recall healing have to say about air hunger or lung breathing weakness? Also wondering, Patrick, if you might tell us about the memories that were coming up when you had the extensive body work. Were they suppressed memories? Were they suppressed memories until then? Could Dr. M and M talk about cost of keeping memories and old feelings, emotions hidden? Oh, cool. A lot of good stuff there. Okay, Doc, you first on the, this is from Lee. Connection, emotion, illnesses, in your opinion, specifically grief and the lungs, recall healing has to say about air hunger.
Okay, so in biology...
Air and hunger. Okay.
Yeah. So in biology, breathing is life. In the old days, if people wanted to know someone was alive or dead, they put a mirror under their nose. If there's no breathing, they're dead. So our biology is designed to keep us alive as long as possible physically. So... one of the big shocks to me, kind of being an anesthesiologist, we learn a lot about lungs and all of that. But what we didn't learn, for instance, is that after wars, after scary times when people have a fear of death, guess what disease comes around as an epidemic? Tuberculosis. And what that is whenever I'm afraid, whether I have an inherited fear or an actual fear for myself of dying, my brain actually makes new lung tissue. Isn't that interesting? It'll actually try to create a third lung so that I have more breathing. It'll make new little air sacs and make the ones that are there bigger. When that crisis is over, some germ comes in to heal that. And then that's why we do something like the peroxide and the silver by nebulizer, because when those things go in there, we're making a counter offer to the lung and saying, will you heal the lung and make it go back to the way it was using the colloidal silver and peroxide rather than the germ? So the lung is about fear of dying. And then the breathing tubes, the bronchi, are about drama in a person's territory. And that's where we get the flu on holidays, is when we're going to go be with people on the holidays that we might not be totally comfortable with. And so our bronchi dilate so we can hold more air that we don't have to share with them. And then when the holidays are over, we get the flu. That's the flu virus coming in to heal those airways back down to their regular size. And asthma, that reactivity in the breathing tubes, that refusing to let go of the air. Once we get it in there, we can't exhale it. That oftentimes has to do with wanting to be in more than one place at a time, which can be a scenario of cheating, like having two lovers and wanting to be with each one, or a child in some situation where they'd rather be out of that home and somewhere else because there's so much drama going on. So that's the asthma part of it, one of the parts of it. So that part, the breathing tube part and the lung part, they all have different triggers, and there's a different programming for each of those parts. So we look at all that, and some miraculous things can happen for people when they look at that and let those things be reprogrammed. And so I will let Patrick talk now about his body work.
Lee, let's see. My experience is what I've learned over the last 2 or 3 years and writing this book and seeing things on the inner planes, you know, on the other than physical. And is that when we, this is my theory, what I'm seeing, is that when we as humans, when we accept a thought or an emotion, you know, whether it be fear or grief or something like that, and if we accept it as being real, and that's really easy to do because you have grief and, or you have a fear, and it sure feels like the lion is chewing on your leg. But if we accept it as real, that it may happen tomorrow, well, then that fear is in the body at that nanosecond because it's all just now. So the fear, so that's in there somewhere because the body is really a thought form which is created by spirit at the direction of soul, and this body is a thought form. It's just a thought form. That's how we create the body. That's how we evolved, in my opinion, and that's how we can get sick and get cancer or tumor by being anxious, because that anxious feeling that we're concerned about getting fired, that's if we believe that that's real, that we could get fired, and boy, what am I going to do? Rather than saying something like, well, you know, I'll be fine. I'm everything's good. The difference in that is dramatic, because by believing you're going to get fired, that's at that second, that's in the body right there. So when you do body work and stuff and do yoga and do qigong and detox and everything else, it helps to release all of these emotions that are there, and they're there since birth, and this is all the way the body forms, and this is the way reason why we look the way we look. This is the reason why we have different illnesses. They're all karmic things because... So when I was doing the body work for the sciatica, some of the most painful stuff, I did hours and hours. I think I had about 25 hours. There were times, and every time I went in, I would make it a spiritual exercise and just surrender to God and just surrender, not think, and just surrender and just sing, Hugh, Hugh, and he would work on me. And I would see things coming out from my childhood. It was fascinating, like just things like talking to my dad or talking to my uncle about this or playing on the playground, or even one time I saw arguing with some guy, some classmate when I was in like fifth grade. And, you know, it's amazing, isn't it, that those things somehow are in there. And not that they're bad or good, but they're in there. And with body work and with the surrender to let things go, that they do come out. And then you can keep cleaning those out until there's nothing else there except your body. And then you can just, get on track to tell it what you want it to do. That's my theory. Could Dr. M and Meridian talk about the cost of keeping memories and old feelings hidden?
Yeah, so it seems that the only things that pass down generationally are the things that are kept secret. So when people want to look at that, they can look at Anne Schutzenberger's book called The Ancestor Syndrome and see some really shocking stories in there. This is a woman who lived in a small village and lived into her 90s. I think she's still alive, actually. And she's been doing these family trees for 40 or 50 years. And so she's gotten to see generation after generation of the same families. And when people keep things secret, it repeats in the next generation and the next generation and the next generation until somebody comes out and actually talks about the feeling of it and shares about it with an open heart. So I could give you a lot of examples from my own life and my own programming, as can a lot of people who've used recall healing or other ways of getting at this programming. But the body carries what my psychology just can't manage to face. So if something comes up for my parents that's too powerful for them, and I'm in the womb or in my first year of life, my brain actually takes on that stress. And I am programmed to be a living answer for whatever was the greatest suffering for my parents during the pregnancy in the first year of life. So in my case, one of those was that my mother gave up her college. I did not know that was a suffering for her until 2 years ago. I got to go and look at it again. But at the exact age when she got married and got pregnant with me, I dropped out of school. It was like in memory of her not being able to have her education. I dropped out, and I couldn't have told you why at the time. I just felt like I couldn't go to classes anymore. And I took 18 hours worth of Fs, which didn't look great on the transcript when applying to medical school.
I wouldn't imagine.
But, you know, that's how powerful this stuff is. So I was programmed unknowingly to be an answer for this suffering for her, that she gave up her education in order to be married and be a housewife.
And it's true for all of us. I mean, honestly, whatever health issue we have, if we look at it, we'll discover that there's a secret, a piece in there that, you know, we're carrying that loyalty, as Rich was mentioning, to some member of our family, or in particular that time from 9 months before conception to a year after we're born, the issues of our parents. We're carrying those secrets, and those secrets show themselves to us, you can say, on a certain level, compassionately, so that we will actually deal with them and support our future generations to be strong and healthy, because we can clear those secrets now so they don't have to carry them and their effects on our DNA.
Okay, well done. 23 after the hour, Patrick Timpone, Meridian Grace, Dr. Richard Massey. So here is Lynn in Chicago. MRI, the existence of a 6 mm spot on the lung. Then over a period of time, had additional MRIs that detected no change. Why then, as this was considered a low-risk incident from the start, would I now be encouraged to have even more MRIs in the future? Anything to do naturally to address the elimination of this spot? Could have been born with it, just calcification. Any advice I can, because I'm being encouraged to do more radiation with these MRIs.
Okay, so for one thing, just to be clear, MRIs, if you're not doing the contrast injection, there's not a radiation, it's a magnetic field. So it's the CAT scans and the X-rays that have the radiation. So just to be clear on that point. The other thing is isn't that funny how we get excited about a spot and make stories about a spot that, as she said, could have been there since birth. If we did not have, quote, administrative entanglements, unquote, we would have the GRCC test available in this country, and a person could get a blood draw for a reasonable amount of money and find out if they have cancer cells circulating in their blood or not. As it is, it costs about $3,000 because the blood has to be sent off to a lab in Greece to get it done. So that being what it is, I don't know how excited I would get about a spot in the lung. So I can't recommend going medical on anything. It seems to increase the chances of bad outcomes in my experience. So I would seek another path.
And for the MRI, if you're going to just be doing an MRI without contrast, go spend a day out on the earth. You know, if it's a great idea after the stress of somebody, you know, trying to zoom that you might have some kind of a serious disease showing up, to let all that go and maybe take a swim in the ocean and let it all wash away, spend some time on the sand or on the dirt, and just allow yourself to let Mother Nature help to balance out the magnetic issues from that excessive, you know, magnetism from the MRI.
So MRI is not radiation. It's just a big dose of heavy magnetic, kind of like driving in my Prius.
Yeah, it's a big magnetic field.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's magnetic field. Yes, it is. And let me just mention this, that since what creates a lung cancer program in our body is fear of dying, there's nothing like going to a hospital and having a bunch of grim people in white coats with stethoscopes looking serious over your scan.
Hello.
To get you worried about dying. And if you start worrying about dying, you will have something go on in your lungs.
Because that's the conflict for the lungs, fear of dying.
You know, too, a lot is said about this magnetic energy, and we know it's not good. But, you know, Doc, I've got the meters, and I can tell you how much magnetic energy is in a Prius, right? And you've been driving a Prius, and you're in good shape. I'm in great shape. We're all both in great shape. I've got 140,000 miles with a lot of magnetic energy. And there's no, I don't have any damage from it. So I don't know. How bad is it?
I know. Some people actually get healed from an MRI.
So, you know, maybe their Prius is healing us. That's a tech. You know what I'm saying? I mean, people say a lot of stuff, you know? So, I mean, once again, Mark Twain. Hi, for Patrick. This is from Juan. Will you please have Gary Hanna back on the show? You two covered a lot. It was a great show. Sure. We'll have him back. For Dr. Massey and Meridian, are there certain people who have adverse reactions to supplementing with iodine. What are some accurate clinical ways to test a person for iodine levels to know when iodine supplementation is called for, especially for issues like hair loss and dry skin?
So I would certainly go back to Lynn Farrow's show and contact all the folks she recommends contacting. So you have that show archived.
Oh, that's F-A-R-R-O-W, Doc? Farrow?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a controversial subject. I mean, there's some people that think that you can't possibly get too much iodine. Other people think that you can get toxic on iodine. Many people believe that when we are getting adverse reactions, it's a detox reaction of other halogens, similar chemical components to iodine, like fluoride and bromine. So, you know, I don't know the actual answer, but those are some of the basic belief systems.
Yeah.
And I don't have clinical tests other than just looking at an iodine level.
Yeah. And still too, Doc, as you know, when you do the thing, you know, put it on there and see how long it takes, a lot depends, I guess, on the kind of iodine too. You have different strengths of Lugol's, you know, you have the Edgar Cayce stuff. It's a moving target, kind of Da Vinci code to know. I don't think there's an exact formula.
And some of the functional medicine folks are now saying that when you put it on the skin, there's an evaporation factor as well, and it's not necessarily accurate. But I think if you see that it disappears really quickly, and after you've been taking it for a while, it doesn't do that anymore, there might be some accuracy.
Right. Yeah, I agree, Marina. And that's real evidence-based medicine. I mean, the proof's in the pudding. You know, I mean, I think that's more accurate than a blood test, but, you know, people call me crazy, too.
So what we're talking about is just a real simple swatch of iodine on the skin and watching it. And if it lasts more than 24 hours, then your body's not needing it. It's not absorbing it. It's not calling it into the tissue. If you do use it and it disappears in less than 24 hours, particularly like 4 to 5 hours, that would be a strong indicator that you need iodine, and you would keep using it until that no longer happens. And if you're in a place like we are with fluoride in the water and you have to take a shower with fluoride, even though we're not drinking it, you know, we've got exposure to a particular chemical that's blocking our iodine reception.
Jim Redding, Ken Rolla, he doesn't sell them, but he sent me a really cool shower filter. And this got out about, I bet 90% of the copper that I was getting through my pipes.
Well, that's
90%.
Cool.
And I think this gets fluoride too. I could turn you on to the name of it. I'll have to ask Ken. Yeah, he doesn't sell them anymore. But that might be something y'all could put on your shower.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, I'd love to look into it. I did a bunch of research, and it looked like it was going to be $7,000.
Oh, no. Yeah. I think this one. And, you know, it was funny with Gary Hanna. I was talking to him, you know, about the copper pipes, you know, and, you know, my rainwater being aggressive water and getting the copper and turning the shower kind of turquoise. And he said, because I was kind of concerned about it, he said, oh, that copper won't hurt you. Don't worry about it. So let that one go. Chew, man. Dodge that bullet. Steve writes in, did you mention your favorite source of, how do you say that? Strophanthus. How do you say it?
Yes, Strophanthus.
Strophanthus. While chatting with Nancy, I noticed, the favorite source is Tea Brazil, T-E-A Brazil. That's a Brazilian place, and they'll ship it to you in a plain brown wrapper. Cool. It's funny. Yeah. They do. They really do. And then, but he said that there's some on a homeopathic version, Meridian. Do you think this would work? And I clicked on the link he sent, and it was from, you know, the classic Highlands, and they have a homeopathic Strophanthus.
Okay, we talked with Thomas Cowan about that directly.
Oh, you did?
Not long ago. And, you know, his experience is that the actual Strophanthus works better in the people that he sees.
Yeah.
And so he recommended staying with that. And if people actually contact his office, they can get the strophanthus now through him with some actual instruction with it.
When did you talk to Colin? Did you do a session with him?
He had a webinar, we were on and talked with him personally.
He's fun, isn't he?
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
I just wanted to say, Patrick, about the strophanthus.
Yeah.
Homeopathic has worked for a lot of people.
Has it?
Yeah, and Thomas talks about it from time to time, but it's much more conclusive to actually use the physical substance in this case.
Right.
So you could try both, and obviously the homeopathic would be wonderful, but and far less expensive than doing the herbal.
I had an interesting experience with that wobbening. I like to say wobbening is easier for me to pronounce it.
You know. And it's fun too.
And it's fun. Wobbening. What a great name. Wobbening. Well, I did it, you know, like when we first talked to Cowan, what was it, 2 years ago or something? I don't know. I did a bottle. And it tasted great. I did it. It really kind of helped me settle down for more sleep and all that. So then about, I don't know, 2-3 months ago, for fun, I said, well, I'm just going to get some more, you know, because why not? It's a nice thing for your heart, maybe. So I bought some. And you know what? After like two times, I knew I didn't need it. It tasted terrible. It was so different. It was amazing. So the body knows, man. The body knows.
It sure does.
So I have it just sitting in the cabinet. If anybody wants some, come by the house. I'll give it to you. Yeah, you know, and I watch Doodle, and I watch her, the way she eats and the way she, you know, grazes at herbs, or the way she'll go some days, 2 days, and not eat anything. Nope, I don't want. It's just so beautiful to watch, boy. She knows exactly what she wants. She knows when she wants it. And if she doesn't want to eat for a day or two, and as soon as I got over that whole dad thing of wanting my daughter to have food, otherwise she was going to die, we're fine.
Yeah. Well, it was probably that public health course in that she had in school that allows her to know those things. That's what helped me so much was my education.
And for those who want that kind of education, there's a great book called The Complete Book of Fasting by Dr. Fung and Jimmy Moore. And talk about fasting, folks. I mean, first of all, he has got all the science behind it, all the way down to the chemistry. And Jimmy was like 410 pounds.
Yeah,
and
I know he was, yeah.
I mean, they are really, really bringing out the benefits, especially for people who have any type of diabetes, folks with cancer, folks with MS. They're doing water fasting with them, salt and water fasting.
Yeah.
They talk about the benefits of feasting and fasting, which is how our ancestors lived. Mm-hmm. They didn't have refrigerators, you know, so they couldn't go and get a bunch of food. They'd have to not go and hunt. Typically they wouldn't have any food until they got back from the hunt, and then they would have their food, and the women might be out foraging, but they didn't get all that much to sustain themselves foraging wise. So people would fast if they didn't catch an animal or whatever. It's just a natural state of being,
you know,
and our body,
as you know, and yeah, Meridian too, people forever used to have a dinner and then they wouldn't eat again until lunch, you know, and that was the fast. And
yeah,
then, hence somebody got the bright idea, let's give us Oreos in the morning, and then they would break the fast, which is where the word breakfast comes from.
Right. And then the Oreos starts that whole insulin response thing, and then we're on the way to diabetes.
Yeah, so. Dr. Daniels, she suggested it's the healthiest thing in the world to skip breakfast. I don't know. Do you guys have an opinion on that?
Well, I've been doing it all my life.
Have you? You just don't do it. You don't eat.
Yeah. I'm not hungry until much later in the day.
Yeah. I mean, why would you eat if you're not hungry?
Mm-hmm.
Duh.
But we have very different metabolisms as well.
Sure. Yeah. If you get hungry, I guess what do you think, Doc? If you get that, start producing some acid and say, feed me, you should probably feed it. Feed the beast.
That kind of makes sense.
It makes sense to me, you know, I don't know. Then you could say, okay, Tommy, well, listen, I'm reading this book and I really shouldn't eat till noon. And your stomach's down there at 8 going, you know what? Feed me. So what would you go by? I'm just saying, you know, I don't know. Call me crazy. Carol writes in, I'll bet she's in Texas. No, I don't know. Do you all have something to counteract mandatory vaccines for humans and pets?
Eat garlic? No.
Throw away your TV, turn off your internet, and homeschool your kids and never talk to another person.
Yeah. No, we've talked. I mean, if they're mandatory vaccines, they're mandatory vaccines. And then you have to deal with the world that be around us and those results. So, you know, I would look to see if there's any type of exemptions in the area that you're in. Do everything you can to prevent yourself from having to do vaccines. If you do have to do them, do one at a time, not the combination vaccines. Fight to not do them until your children are old enough to actually get some type of benefit, because their immune systems are mature enough at like age 9 or older, at least 4. You know, do everything you can to keep from getting a vaccination in hospital, you know, for things that their children are not going to be exposed to. And start fighting for your right to not vaccinate.
But don't you just want to be loved sometimes?
I think so.
Walgreens or HEB, and you just want somebody to stick something in you, you know, because everybody else is getting that done, you know.
Yeah.
And
have you had your flu shot today?
You know, and it's free and everything. I mean, it's like a real gift from the medical industry.
And to the emailer, from my perspective, you know, I always kind of go right for the religion. Pretty much religion, a lot of the boys in the Gov, you know, they like to stay away from that because it's pretty powerful. You know, just as something as simple as, you know, it's just against my religion to put anything into my family's bodies that could be harmful. And I see the research why there's some problems possibly, and I just can't take the chance. It's against my religion, period, done.
I agree with you. And that's what I would do. And if you don't want to do that, in Texas, you can fill out a form at the Texas Department of Health saying that you philosophically disagree with it. And if you find a doctor who's seen vaxxed or done any actual research, they'll sign you an exemption. So in Texas, you can get all three, the last I heard. But I agree with Patrick on this one. You know, the Inquisition came before the AMA. So.
And I don't care. I don't care how many politicians you have in your back pocket. Big G has authority. You know what I mean? You know what I mean, Jelly Bean?
Yes.
You know. Yeah. Okay. A couple more, and then we'll go. We just have so much fun here. Okay. Let's see. Lady with a rash. Oh, MMS or ultraviolet blood irradiation can work.
Mm-hmm. Mm. They actually have. I also use another substance that most people don't know about. And my son reminded me the other day of how well it works on rashes. It's a blend of minerals, and it's called Alkalinity Now. You can get it through us. You can soak a rag in it and keep the tissue moist and just leave it on there, and many people's rashes disappear.
Wow.
I don't, in the case of this woman's, but I also have used it internally for a lot of pretty exciting things. I just don't have any studies on it, but I took it to India and watched typhus, malaria, and dengue go in 3 days by drinking a tablespoon of it twice a day.
Wow.
It's used in Africa for people who have AIDS, 14 days, including Kaposi's sarcoma, seems to be gone. That's the stories they're telling. I haven't seen it with my own two eyes, but it's missionaries who are doing this work with it. So it's pretty interesting. I know the missionaries.
Yeah. This emailer says that they cured life-threatening, very fast-growing infection, hole in my neck, in a very short period of time. With the MMS.
Yes, I've heard that too. I've heard wonderful things about using it externally on the tissue. Mm-hmm. I just I know it's very challenging for some people to get it down orally, but it can be wonderful, and there's a lot of very exciting stories about it.
Yeah, boy, it's probably the worst tasting stuff on the planet, isn't it?
Yeah. So there is a dog.
Probably holds the record, Doc, doesn't it, for the crappiest tasting stuff.
The most disgusting tasting thing.
Yeah, let the viewers send in. Let's make our own top 10 list.
That's a really top 10, boy. Oh, man, that's right there.
Well, that's right there. But I just have to say that there's a couple of doctors now who feel strongly that you can put a tiny bit of baking soda in with your MMS, and it actually tastes like lemonade. It is very doable.
Really?
It reduces the amount of acidity, so it slows the process down, which is actually a good thing for a lot of people because they can get very sick when the toxicity starts to release when they're using MMS.
I see. So a little bit of baking soda, they say Meridian doesn't make it not work as well. I mean, it still works as well, they're saying.
It still works, but it's working more. It's a little slower. Yeah. So, you know, we'll talk about how when we die, it's typically because the body's healing itself too fast. This is slowing down the healing level to a level that we can handle the discomfort of the detox.
Oh, okay. All right. Have you ever did it? Did you ever put it in your mouth? What am I trying to say? Have you ever put that in your mouth, Doc?
Have you put MMS in your mouth?
You know, I don't know that I've actually done the MMS.
Oh, trust me, if you did, you'd remember it.
You would.
Yeah, I've got
like 50 bottles. So we'd totally let you try some, Richard.
Oh, yeah.
I think we should let the Doc try some next month on the show live.
Oh.
What do you think?
I'll have a bucket available just in case.
Oh, man. God.
Yeah. It can be very strong, but very powerful.
Well, do you know, there's a fellow, God love him, Daniel. Washington State was the biggest seller of MMS, probably in the world, I think, one of them. This is a legal substance they use for water purification.
Wow.
And, you know, oh, it is. You can buy them. That's what they use it for. It's a legal substance sold around the world. He was selling it, of course, for people that they were using it. I don't know how he got in trouble, whether he's making claims or I don't. But we had him on the show about a year ago, and he's in jail right now.
Wow.
Man. Oh, my goodness. Well, everybody knows there's no water in the human body, so how could you possibly sell it to people?
God love it.
Christmas, you know what I mean? Okay, well, I'm going to try to calm down.
Calm down. Take a breath. Give him a Prozac.
No, he doesn't need a Prozac.
Okay.
No, I just heard about someone the other day who was making their own stem cells and basically giving it away to people who were sick, and they got 4 years in prison.
Oh, my goodness.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You know, Dr. Bradford ended up under house arrest, and he was 80 years old, and he was making his own stem cells from his own cattle. Apparently, it's easy to do. You know, it's the new latest thing. It's $15,000 for a stem cell IV among the people I know.
And you can make your own. You can make your own?
You can make your own real cheaply if you know how, and I don't know how. Don't come after me. I don't want to hear any helicopters this afternoon.
Nobody lives here. Just us chickens.
Yeah.
And we're eating GMO food, so we're good.
Yeah. We'll be dumped down before you know it. You know?
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Well, so who's Bradford? Who's Bradford?
He's the guy that taught me the microscopy stuff. He invented that microscope of his, and he had the company American Biologics. That was his company.
That's what I do, boy. They come out of my house with a copter. Right? Just us chickens, man. So did they really give this guy, this man, house arrest for doing that to himself?
Oh, yeah. He had a clinic in Mexico and, you know, a cancer clinic in Mexico. And Jonathan Wright said one time that you do okay as long as you never share anything useful with anybody else. But once you start sharing, there are people who feel threatened by that, and there are repercussions. And that was his experience, and that was Dr. Bradford's experience, apparently.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, final question. You might as well, you know, stick right to the poop area, because that's always good to end with, you know. This is from an email that says, okay, so why do people get polyps, and what do you do if you have polyps? Because evidently this person's got some, somebody told them they had some polyps. So tell folks what polyps are and your opinion of why we get them.
You know, I would have to look and see, you know, like colon polyps, I'm assuming. But my thought is...
Yeah, colon polyps is what they're talking about. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. So in the colon is the part where it's a place where we can hold on to things that have happened to us. It's the last place where we can hold on to something.
Before it leaves the building, right?
Yeah, we can't say this word, but when something shinola-ish happens to you in your life,
yeah,
and you're having a hard time letting go of it,
yeah,
the brain will make extra colon cells, because to the brain, it says, it reasons like this: if I give this person more colon cells, they'll be able to let go of this horrible thing that happened to them.
Good for the brain.
Exactly. And the brain does that when we're unable to find a way to let go of it ourselves. So in recall healing and a lot of other techniques, we help people find a way to let go of that so that their brain doesn't have to give them a polyp or a cancer in their colon in an attempt to help them let go of something. That's all it is.
I agree. So the soul, the person is creating the polyp or the whatever, so they'll take a look at the colon and they can take a look at what they're holding on to.
Yeah, and mechanically, it's just a way of saying if we get more cells, more letting go cells down there, we'll let go better. It's just a, cool. a reflex, biological reflex there. So do a life review, you know, take a look at all the crummy things people have done to you and write them down and process them. It can change your life, even if you don't have polyps.
And I find it interesting. I just pulled up the book by Dr. Gilbert Renan.
Renan.
And he basically says that a colon polyp is, I have to forgive a separation.
Oh.
And it's interesting because we know that the skin or the colon is an invaginated portion of the skin. And when we have skin issues, it's separation issues. So this specifically is about forgiving a separation. And in homeopathy, there's a couple of remedies that I've used very effectively for polyps in the nose and the colon. It's the same remedies. So we just have to find out the specifics of what's going on for that person, because, again, it's a whole family of remedies. It's not just one. But one could look into that, and one could definitely look at a separation that one has not forgiven yet. Mm-hmm. In either in ourselves or in another.
Of course, Patrick and I have never been dumped. So
No. Never.
Dumped. It's yeah. Right in there.
Dumped. Well, that really cuts right to the quick, Doc. Dumped.
What a great
word. Dumped. I haven't heard that word in a long time, but have you been dumped, Doc? You wanna tell us about it?
My goodness,
that's hilarious. Well, that's hilarious.
One who's patiently been sitting here to see me, so I am going to say goodbye to y'all, but thank you so much for the opportunity to visit.
Well,
today,
Miss Grace, you're just lovely and talented, and good to have you here, so come by anytime.
Thank you, Patrick.
Doctor and I will close out the show. See you, Meridian. Bye. Okay.
Bye.
Hey Doc, this is a good one you and I can do. And I was untruthful first time today about this last being the last email. This is a good one to end on rather than poop. What's a good way to practice gratitude? By walking outside and saying what I'm grateful for, writing it down, or just thinking about
It?
Wow. I think this person's got it already.
Yeah, I think so. And there will be many paths there. One of my favorites is gratitude comes from what we give, not from what we get. So when I'm doing my breathing and saying, may everyone be blessed with good nutrition while I'm eating. When I'm swimming in the creek, may everybody be blessed with a great place in nature to go rejuvenate. And I'm putting out blessings for others. Gratitude seems to come. What's one of your favorites?
Well, you know, I just do it. You know, Doodle and I before bed, and we're lying there, and she's there next to me, and we'll just say all the things we're grateful for. You know, just from my heart, you know, grateful for this, grateful for my spiritual teachings and my teachers, and that God loves me. And we have a special master we work with who are the patron of animals, you know, his name is Prajapati. And that's who Doodle and I talk to for things with animals. And I'm just grateful, you know, and I'll just say it, Doc. I'll say it out loud so Doodle and I both get it and grateful. You know, then work my way down into the physical. I'm grateful for a nice house that's clean and safe, and for the wonderful food I have available. You know, yeah, just be grateful. Yes. It's not very difficult. Just be grateful, right? Just look around and take a breath, as this email is saying, and just say, "Wow, this is pretty cool." I mean, the world is bonkers, Doc, but hey, you know, that's all. It's always been bonkers. We can still be grateful, right? You know what I mean? We can still be grateful. Yeah, well, Doc, you're fun. Thanks for being here. We love you. You know what? We're going to do something today. After 8 years almost, we're going to change. I didn't consult with you on this, but it's my show, so what do I care? Okay. We're going to change. We're going to change your theme song.
Okay.
Your ending theme song. Don't you think I think we've done that?
Yeah.
Don't you think? So here's the one I picked out for you. We'll do it, and you can listen to it and as long as you want on Skype. And if you like it, then we'll use it. If not, we'll give you we'll get you another one, okay? So we'll go through them. This could take a year just to get the one you like. But you might like this one because when last time I played it, you really liked it. So, Doc, thanks a lot. Oh, we appreciate it, brother. And let me get with you, and we'll get together. I'd like to do a kind of a fun hair urine thing and just kind of check out all the men's and just to see where they are. That'd be fun to do after all the stuff I've been doing. Yeah. I think it'd be useful information. Even though I won't do anything about it, it'll be fun. You know what I'm saying? Okay. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we'll do that.
Awesome.
All right, kiddo. Thanks a lot, brother. See you real soon. Right. Okay, so this is going to be your future next song, if you want it to be, okay? Thanks, Doc. I love you all very much. We'll see you tomorrow with Sharon and Patrick and Open Phone Friday. Thanks to Lynn. Thanks to Sharon. We appreciate your support.
Well, she won't give in. She won't crack a smile or a grin. Well, she won't give in. But she sure is different. Well, it's written in red, all in her eyes. There's no disguise. Well, she lost so much in Tivoli. Together we could go. She won't let on, oh, that I'm never gonna let on.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.